I want to be a worker for the Lord. I want to love and trust His holy word. I want to sing and pray and be busy every day in the kingdom of the Lord. I will work, I will pray in the vineyard of the Lord. I will work, I will pray, I will labor every day in the vineyard of the Lord. I want to be a worker every day. I want to lead the erring in the way that leads to heaven above, where all is peace and love in the kingdom of the Lord. I will work, I will pray in the vineyard of the Lord. I will work, I will pray, I will labor every day in the vineyard of the Lord. I want to be a worker strong and brave. I want to trust in Jesus' power to save. All who will truly come shall find a happy home in the kingdom of the Lord. I will work, I will pray in the vineyard of the Lord. I will work, I will pray, I will labor every day in the vineyard of the Lord.
Good evening. The scripture reading will be from Exodus 23:20-23, and also it'll be chapter 33:1-3. If you have a ribbon or something to put in the chapter 33, we'll read that in a second. But I'm going to start with chapter 23, and starting in verse 20, it reads, "Behold, I send an angel before you to keep you in the way and to bring you into the place which I have prepared. Beware of him and obey his voice. Do not provoke him, for he will not pardon your transgressions, for my name is in him. But if you indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. For my angel will go before you and bring you into the Amorites and the Hittites and the Perizzites and the Canaanites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, and I will cut them off." Chapter 33. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Depart and go up from here, and the people whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt to the land which I have swore to Abraham, your descendants, I will give it. And I will send my angel before you, and I will drive out the Canaanite and the Amorite and the Hittite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite. Go up to the land flowing with milk and honey, for I will not go up in your midst, lest I consume you on the way, for you are a stiff-necked people."
It's kind of an interesting reading when you think about it. When you look at Exodus chapter 23, and then look again at Exodus chapter 33, it's almost like you're looking at two different gods. You see a God that says, "I'll be with you," and then a God that says, "I won't be with you." Each of those passages, God is still encouraging Moses to take the people to the promised land. But what happened between chapter 22 and chapter 33 amongst God's people? That's a very interesting question. I want you to look at Numbers chapter 13. And let's try to take just a moment here to look at this intervening period. I mean, if you look in Exodus, you can see some of the things that have happened. Moses goes up into the mountain. He gets the commandments. He comes back. He sees the nation has built a golden calf. And he's condemning their worshiping of idols. And then you can see in chapter 33 of Exodus maybe why God has announced what he did. He still wants them to go to the land because he had promised it to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But now he's not so sure that he wants to be with them, else he might destroy them. But go ahead, my angel will still go before you. We'll still destroy those nations that are in the land. but I'm just not going to go with you. And then I think when we look at Numbers chapter 13, you kind of get an idea of why that might be the case, or how they felt when they went into the land without maybe God's initial blessings the first time through. In Numbers chapter 13, I just want to read a few select verses here, and then we'll begin to introduce the text for this evening, or the idea for this evening. In Numbers chapter 13, I'm going to read the first three verses, then I'm going to skip down to verse 25, so you might want to train your eyes to go straight down to that verse. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Send out for yourself men so that they may spy out the land of Canaan, which I am going to give to the sons of Israel, and you shall send a man from each of their father's tribes, every one a leader among them." And so Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran at the command of the Lord, all of them men who were heads of the sons of Israel. And then skip down to verse number 25. When they returned from spying out the land at the end of 40 days, they proceeded to come to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the sons of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh, and they brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Thus they told him and said, "We went into the land where you sent us, and it certainly does flow with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who live in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large, and moreover, we saw all the descendants of Anak there. And Amalek is living in the land of Negev, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites are living in the hill country, and the Canaanites are living by the sea and by the side of Jordan." Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "We should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we will surely overcome it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are strong for us." So they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone and spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size. There also we saw the Nephilim. The sons of Anak are part of the Nephilim, and we became grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." Now, why did I have all of those readings this evening? Because I want us to consider what it's like to walk on the face of the earth with or without the physical presence of God, with or without the spiritual presence of God. I want us to consider how Israel, from one series of passages in Exodus chapter 23 to Exodus chapter 33, could so easily or so quickly lose hope. They've been exited out of Egypt. They've been led through the land. The sea has parted. They've come to the mountain. They've experienced God's thunderings and lightnings. They've received his blessings. They've received encouragements from Moses and Aaron. And then he goes up to see God one more time before they're ready to travel. When he comes back, there's this golden calf. They have so soon been removed from their faith that God is very disappointed, to say the least, and that he has decided that he is still going to allow them to go in the land, but not with his physical presence, so to speak, although he does travel with them. And then we see for the next 40 years after they've come to that land and they've went inside, just a few months before they travel to the land of Canaan, and they receive this march to go in for the 40 days. And as a part of that, when they came out, there's only two that were willing to say, "Yes, we could take the land," and that was Joshua and Caleb. And the other spy said, "We can't take the land. There's giants in the land. There's no way we could possibly take this land, even though God has blessed them all along the way." What does that have to do with us this evening? What does that have to do with us in the 21st century? That's what I want to spend a little time thinking about. When we think about Israel coming to the promised land, I want you to think about this idea of these giants being in the land. If you had the King James translation, when you got to the part about those who were, let me see what verse it was again, great size in verse number 32 of Numbers chapter 13. In the King James, it says there were giants in the land, and these giants were the sons of Anak. So depending on what translation you were raised on, visualizing these giants, these Nephilim, these descendants of large people, you can understand why in verse 33 some might would say, you know, we were so small in their sight, we humble, feeble creatures could never overtake the land. And I think if we spend this life thinking we can overtake something and just say that God is with us, then we're probably going to be defeated as well. And so with that mindset, I want to talk about how we can slay the giants in this world that we live in now. Israel, when they got to the promised land, all of a sudden it dawned on them that first they needed to slay the giants, and then they could inherit the land. All this time, they thought probably we would go to the land, and God's going to take the land. He's going to take the Hivites, the Amorites, the Jebusites, the Perizzites. All of those people will be slain in advance of Israel coming. And then they find out that they're actually going to have to go and conquer the land. So many times as Christians, and I'm not speaking in for everyone, but I'm speaking mainly about myself. When we travel this Christian journey, it's not always easy. It's not always the way we might have thought it could be. When I became a Christian 35 years ago, I was escaping the world and trying to travel to a place that would rescue me, and I would be safe and I would mature and life would be grand. Because every Christian I'd ever met was so happy and so full of life, and that it seemed like everything was going perfectly for them. And then when I got to the land, I realized that I've got to slay the giants before I can inherit the land. And so even though we might have a vision of what Christianity ought to be, the Bible reminds us that without the challenging of the individual, faith can't grow. And so tonight I want to spend just a little time talking about how to be an overcomer, how to be an achiever, how to recognize that this world is not a paradise. Although we would want it to be the paradise, although we have the vision that eventually something good's going to happen to us, it's not always going to happen today. I know everybody's got a story about the different challenges that they've had as a Christian. And we all have those stories, and we can all share those stories, and we do, and we will. But when we think about being a Christian and walking across the face of this earth, this is, I think, and Gary said it this morning, I don't remember if it was in a Bible class or in the sermon, but this is not our dwelling place. This is the preparation land for that final dwelling place. And although we might have an idea of what heaven is like, we really don't know what that's like. But we have the text that tell us that there are certain conditions that must be met in order to inherit those blessings. And so Israel was prepared for that, I think, in their mind, but not in their flesh and in their heart. They thought God's going to be with us. Surely He's here right now. He's in our presence where two or more are gathered. God is right here in the midst of us. But each one of us probably brought a challenge to this building tonight. I know I did. It's been 5 or 6 years since I've preached, and I've had an upset stomach all afternoon. So how about that, huh? You know, here's somebody that's preached for 25 years, and I've got the butterflies, right? How about that? But if you think about all of those throughout the Bible, and just turn to Job. I just got to get my feet underneath me this evening. And once we get there, we'll be okay. So y'all pray for me. I've been praying all day. When you look at Job, chapter 14, in the King James, it says, "Man is born of woman. Man who is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble." In the New American Standard, it says, "Man who is born of woman is short-lived and full of turmoil." That passage made a lot of sense long about the time I became a Christian. I don't know what brought you to the church, and Joe and I were sharing this evening about different circumstances that bring people to the church, and he had shared his walk back to faith, and how there's things on the outside of these doors, outside of these walls, outside of maybe even your immediate family that continue, maybe even in your family, that continue to challenge you to either deny God or to just real maybe trying to convince you that He doesn't even exist. Not so much to deny Him because He's not helped you, but even so far as to say He would never be available. There's a battle in this world for the heart and soul of man. And I don't think you had to walk very far in your Christian walk to realize that was true. The moment I was baptized, I began to be challenged over and over and over and over and over again. I prayed earnestly, Lord, help me find the truth. And although I found the truth and the truth rescued me and saved me from myself and from this world, it didn't mean the devil was going to quit. This world is not our friend. Although we make do with what we have, and just like when they went into the land, the Israelites had to go into that land and had to conquer the land, and we see all of their struggles. The Old Testament is about the struggles of God's people. And then finally grace comes. And grace rescued them, even though so many had perished in the wilderness prior. God had a rescuing plan, and that was Jesus Christ. Job, we know the story of Job. He was a few days, whatever a few days is. I know in the funeral business, I literally know what a few days is. I have buried babies that were 3 and 4 months old and seasoned adults that were 103, 105. But what always surprises me every time it happens is, and I didn't do the statistics yet for 2018, but for the last, I've been in the funeral business now for 12 years. For the last, I'll say the last 10 or 11 years, I've done statistics on those that have taken their own life. The challenges of this world became so extreme in their life that they felt like there was nothing left to live for. Now, some of them profess to be spiritual, and they just couldn't deal with the things of this life, and life overwhelmed them. But about somewhere between 10 and 13% of the cases we handle at the funeral home are suicide, or those that took their own life. About 50% of those are under the age of 30. And about 25% of those are under the age of 20. So think about, when we think about the world outside these walls, and we talk about the urgency of the gospel, and we talk about the souls that need to hear what grace did for me. When I say me, I mean you as an individual, me as an individual. How important is it for us to be like Caleb and understand that God is ready to be with us, even though we might have denied Him, we might have circumvented His will to do our will, He still promises to be with us if we will follow Him. The first passage that Aaron read in Exodus chapter 23, if you remember, it says, if you'll do these things, I'll be with you. And they didn't do those things. He still was willing to fulfill His promise. He just said, I'm not going to be with you. My angel will be with you. And don't cross Him because He will still exercise my judgment. But when it comes to those young souls, the 20s and the 30s, and we even had one, it was several years ago now, he was like in his 80s and went out to the back of his property and took his life. What do we do? How can we help them? How can we help ourselves deal with the challenges of this life? How can we find truly faith as the victory? Well, that's what I wanted to talk about tonight and just kind of introduce the subject, because we only have another 15 minutes or so. I just want to introduce the subject. I developed this lesson about 7, 8 years ago and presented it at another congregation in a Bible class on a Wednesday night. It was about 13 weeks, so I have a number of lessons in this series. This is part one of the introduction. And so if you want the rest of the material, you're welcome to have it. If I have an opportunity to speak again, we'll continue with that thought. But I wanted us to spend a little time dealing with the challenges of this life. How do we overcome the obstacles that stand before us so that we can truly be faithful in the end? We sing the song, Faith is the Victory. Absolutely. But how do I hold on to my faith? How do I maintain? How do I have the courage to fight the giants in this world? There are some giants, distractions. I'm a big football fan. You know, I left at the end of the third quarter to be here tonight. It's a challenge for me. Now, we laugh about that, and it is true. Some of you probably did the same thing. But it's just like Jerry has said, and I don't mean to necessarily be singling people out, but this is a family. And we ought to act like a family. And when Jerry says it hurts when he misses a week or a Sunday or a Wednesday, it ought to. It truly ought to. You know, there was a few times early in my faith where I was challenged by denominational beliefs. I mean, I was baptized for the remission of my sins. But when I started studying the Scriptures, there were those who were older, more mature in the Scriptures, maybe not in holding to the truth, but they knew how to twist the Scriptures to make me try to believe something else, and it was a struggle. So maybe our young people, maybe you need to just hold on and ask questions and don't get discouraged, don't get all twisted up to where you feel like you have no hope anymore, because the power of God to save us is right here and right here. This is the power of God, and the passage was read this morning, quoted this morning. Paul said, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ, for it is the power of God. This is the almighty power. But I want to turn to Romans chapter 1. I want you to read the rest of that verse. Romans chapter 1 and verse 16, even through verse 17. For I'm not ashamed of the gospel, I think New King James says, of Jesus Christ. For it is the power of God for salvation or unto salvation to everyone who believes, to everyone who believes, it is the power of God. To everyone who believes, it is the power of God. It's not just reserved for those who are more faithful than me or full of faith. It's everyone who believes that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. This is your power. To the Jew first and also to the Greek, and we could talk about that later in the context of that setting. That was part of the message Paul was trying to present, that the gospel was for everybody. But here's what I want you to key in on, and the reason I'm reading this evening. Listen to verse 17. The gospel of Jesus Christ is the power of God, for in it, the gospel, in the gospel, is the righteousness of God being revealed, faith by faith. Faith unto faith unto faith unto faith, because the righteous man shall, can, and will live by faith. I don't have to see God manifest himself in a cloud. I don't have to see God walking into the building and sitting down on the front pew, and when I'm finished, he stands up and delivers a message, and we believe because we've seen Jesus. The power of God is in the gospel message unto salvation for everyone that believes. The righteousness where we can walk by faith comes from here. In Galatians chapter 6, I think this passage was at least introduced by Tom the other night, and I just want to spend just a moment looking at the first five verses of Galatians. In chapter 6. I want you to know that the challenges in this life are no respecter of persons. I don't know the road you walked, and you don't know the road I walked, and we come here and we commune together as a united body in the gospel of Jesus Christ. But until you've walked in my shoes and I've walked in your shoes, I don't know your struggles. Although I want to know your struggles, and I want to be able to help you, and I need you to help me, and that's the community of believers, and that's why we're here, to be encouraged by the gospel and to share in one another's burdens. And so one of the ways we can overcome the giants in this world is to come and to assemble and to worship and to grow and to love and to have fellowship one with another under the umbrella of God's grace. There's no umbrella out there. You're on your own out there. Now, I don't mean out there when we dismiss at 7 o'clock. I mean out there away from the gospel. Inside here, the house of protection, the church of Jesus Christ, this is where safety is. He's the good shepherd. We're going to sing a song. I don't remember the exact title, but I remember that it had the idea of Jesus being the shepherd for the invitation. There might be someone here who's walked in out of the world tonight who needs to find that place of rescue, that place that can support you and build you up in the faith by the power of Jesus Christ. Not by my power, not by the might of the group. There's not necessarily strength in numbers, but there is power in the one who brought us all together. And we can feel the comfort of that. Galatians chapter 6. It's kind of a conflicting passage if you don't understand what you're looking at. So maybe if this is the first time you've looked at these first five verses, we'll talk about them for just a moment. Brethren, if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, so that you too will not be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and therefore fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But each one must examine his own work, and then he will have a reason for boasting in regard to himself alone and not in regard to another. For each one will bear his own load. You see the conflict between verse 2 and verse 5? There's a time where we can help one another, and there's a time where we have to slay our own giants. Evidently, Caleb and Joshua thought that with God on their side, they could slay because he had promised to give them the land. The other 10 spies came back with the fruit that God had promised. Flows with milk and honey, and evidently, according to the text, it appears as if they got a rod and some cluster of fruit, and they carried it between two men, a big cluster, probably of grapes, maybe of figs. Carrying it between them. They saw the bounty of the land, and God had promised all of that to them. It's yours, now go and take it. The world belongs to the righteous. This world belongs to us. If you understand Jesus in Matthew chapter 5, we will inherit this. And I don't mean inherit a physical earth, but as we understand that this is our possession, we have triumphed over the world. But we got to believe that we can overcome any giant the devil puts before us. When we think of the giants of this world, my mind goes to the biblical passage of David and Goliath. Here's King Saul, big fella. Let's just say he was probably a giant in his day. The Bible says in stature, he was a head above everyone else. So he was tall, dark, handsome. But when it came time to fight the Philistines, he didn't like that giant, Goliath from Gath. And he went into his tent and trembled and could not lead the people. And here's David, a man after God's own heart, says, with God, we can defeat him. And you know the rest of the story, and if you don't, I would encourage you to read David and Goliath's story. Most of us have heard it from our youth. David didn't think he could do it, but he believed God could do it. And if he was obedient to God's will, which he was, the victory was God's and Israel's. And so I would challenge you, the little victories for us as we slay those giants in this world, it's God's victory. Give God the glory for being able to overcome that temptation that so easily besets you. Work on it. Pray. Fight for yourself. Fight for your life. And when God gives you the victory, give Him the glory. There are some burdens that we can't bear alone. And that's Galatians chapter 6, verse 2. Bear one another's burdens. And so fulfill the law of Christ. It's my responsibility to help you with what you need. And then we get down to verse number 5. And there is a time where we need to answer for ourselves. So we each have our own burdens to bear. But there's a time for us to rally together for the weakness of others. Doesn't mean you have to deal with it alone. These young men and women and older men and women that have taken their lives unnecessarily. Usually when it boiled down to it, it was some relationship that went awry, or the loss of a job, or some sickness that they didn't feel like they could fight through, even though they might have trusted in God. I want to encourage you that this is a place of help. And so each and every opportunity that we have when we come to assemble, we always offer the invitation. It's not time for that yet. Don't get your songbooks yet. But there is a time where you can come forward. And you know, for you it might seem like a big thing, and it is. So big that you can't share it with anybody. Come forward. Announce you need the prayers of the church. Pray to God on your behalf. Strengthen you. Encourage you. And we can do that. Does it have to be a public sin for you to come forward? Or even to ask for someone to pray for you? I don't believe so. Pray for one another. Bear one another's burdens. I would love, although I haven't said it publicly, I would love to babysit some of these babies. Take them home with me so that mom and dad can go do something. So the offer's there. Grandma Robin, Grandpa Howard, we'll take them for, you know, what can we do to lift your burden? Can I pray for you? Can I just be a friend to listen? Can I mow your grass? Can I trim your trees? I don't do inside cleaning very well, but I do the outside okay. So what I'm trying to say is the little things in life sometimes weigh us down to where they become a giant and they didn't have to. Now, when we look at Exodus, I don't want to make it smaller than it is. When we look at Exodus chapters 23 and 33, conquering a land is a big job. For a slave nation that's wandering in the wilderness. And so I don't want to make that scene I don't want to limit it in any way. That was a big deal. That was absolutely a big deal. And here's Moses, who was raised in Pharaoh's house, and then he was a shepherd, and now he's a leader of this nation of slaves, and he's trying to bring them through the wilderness, and they see these rumblings and they don't really understand what's going on with God. And somebody says, okay, let's make an idol like we used to in Egypt. And we're more familiar with that. And we've got people coming out of the world or coming out of denominationalism. And they want to use the things that work there in the gospel of Jesus Christ. And they get a blended religion and they're all confused. We can help with that. We can provide the information and the comfort. We can help you overcome that transition. We can help you slay that giant. It just seems too much. I can't make the change. My family grew up XYZ religion and I could never walk away from that. I'd be all alone. How many times have I heard that in my life? I just can't walk away from mom and dad's religion. I can't do it. That's a giant way too big for me. You don't have to do it alone. We're here to help. We want to help. We're begging you. Let us help you. What I would say as we get ready to close tonight is that the Christian walk, take it to the individual level now. We've examined what's out there. We've examined the group. Now let's make it personal. God said, in several occasions through the Apostle Paul, we won't read all these scriptures for the sake of time this evening, but if you want to write them down, this is a challenging walk, the Christian walk. It's very challenging. If you want to go ahead and turn to Ephesians chapter 6, we'll read some of those passages in conclusion, but I want to emphasize that when Paul says we're running a race, I don't know if you've ever run a race. When I was in the Air Force, and I talked to somebody the other day that's in the Air Force now, they have to do a series of obstacle things, sit-ups, push-ups, you know, different calisthenics, and run the mile and a half. And all I had to do when I was in was run the mile and a half, you know. You know, we've had all the other branches of service laugh at us because all we had to do was run a mile and a half each year, and we get to maintain our status in the military. But as a Christian, I've never had to work so hard as I have as a Christian to maintain my faith and to support others and the prayer life and the family and the church and the community and all that running of that race and trying to maintain my public presence You know, because the world expects a Christian to act a certain way, and you know, I'm the one. Robin used to say that I would open my mouth just to change feet, and that's okay. I'm okay with that, as long as I'm not saying anything wrong. You know, I might just embarrass myself, and usually her too. But see, now you learn a little bit more about people when you get a chance to visit. And so tonight, as we encourage one another to run the race, I want you to run your race. And I'll run right beside you. We've got different obstacles, but I can run right with you. And at 57 years old, I'll try to keep up. If you get a little bit ahead of me, I'm going to keep you in my sight. And if you get out of my sight, I start praying. I hope they make it. I hope they make it. I hope they make it. I pray they make it. And when you fall down, I'm still running. I'm going to pick you up, because that's what Galatians 6 said to do. I'm going to pick you up, and we're going to keep running. So don't stop running. Because somebody, if you do fall, somebody's behind you going to pick you up. That's a comfort, isn't it? Shouldn't we be comforting one another with these things? Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of the giants. Because we have a God that's bigger than all of that. He's out of this world. But yet He's right here with us. He created all of this for you and for me. Going to be a super blood wolf something moon tonight. Amazing. It's up at 11:30 tonight. I won't be up. Maybe some of the young people will stay up long enough to watch it. But that's God fearfully and wonderfully made. The things like that ought to just to continue to encourage you that God is great. And He can do all things. And in Philippians chapter 3, I'm not asking you to turn there. Paul said, not only are we running a race, but we're pressing, striving for the prize. What's the prize for the Christian race? Heaven eternal with God the Father, His Son Jesus Christ, and the Comforter, the Holy Spirit, the one who has helped you through all of this and continues to help us. He's the helper, the comforter, the Spirit of God that rests within His Word. It's that sword of the Spirit. This is that which we get to use to do battle. We're going to read that in a few minutes in Ephesians chapter 6. Before I read Ephesians chapter 6, I want to share with you a song. I'm not going to sing it. I'm not going to try to sing it. Many, many years ago, visiting at a congregation here in Plant City, over on Laura Street, as a preacher student, they pulled out the little brochure, paper binders, just the words written in the book. No music, no nothing. They knew how to sing it. They were going to sing it their way anyway. But here's the words that I've never forgotten. I'm a hard-fighting soldier on the battlefield. And then they repeated that. I'm a hard-fighting soldier on the battlefield. We walk right. We talk right, we sing right, we pray right on the battlefield. And they sang it over and over. We're in a battle. We're in a battle for the hearts and souls and minds of men. Our own to begin with and those around about us. In Ephesians chapter 6, finally, verse number 10, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of His might. Put on the whole armor of God so that you might be able to stand and to withstand the schemes of the devil. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness. Oh my goodness, I don't understand. Against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. You know, not only are we struggling with things in this world, apparently there are spiritual forces outside of our immediate visual presence that are vying for our souls. They want us. They want to draw us away from God. And they're active and they're busy. Paul said, they're active and they're busy and they want you. So put on your armor. This is a battle. Some of us aren't ready for battle. The study and the prayer and the preparation. Take you a buddy. Take you somebody. You know, there was a buddy system in the military. We always had to go certain places with someone else. Divers still have the buddy system. Don't go under the water unless you take somebody with you and know exactly what you... Be prepared. And if you're not prepared, we can help you get prepared. I'm still preparing. This is a hard fight. And sometimes I get tired. And I need some help. And then the next thing you know, it's Wednesday night at 7:30. And I get that help. And then again, Sunday morning at 9:30 for the Bible class, the preparation time. And then the charge at 10:30. And then we go home and we come back at 6 and we get a second helping. You know, the evening charge. Now we've had the morning charge and the evening charge, and that should get us till Wednesday. It's a hard preparation. Therefore, take up the armor of God so that you'll be able to resist in the evil day. And having done everything to stand, stand therefore, having girded your loins with the truth, and having put on the breastplate of righteousness. Remember, the gospel is the power of God unto salvation. It is the righteousness that we wear. And having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace, I am prepared. In addition to all, taking up the shield of faith, with which you'll be able to extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. And verse 18 sometimes is left out of the preparation for the soldier. And I think it's one of the most important things we can do. Because my shield may not, it may be battle worn. I may need to repair my shield. Or to sharpen my sword. Or to change my shoes. Or lace them up a little tighter. And that's where verse 18 comes in. With all prayer and petition. Here's the charge for the soldier of Christ. With all prayer and petition, pray at all times in the Spirit. And with this in view, be on the alert with all perseverance and petition for all the saints. You've heard the expression, if you've ever watched any kind of a war movie, I've got your six, right? We need somebody that's got our six. Somebody that's going to look out for us. This is that army. We're on the battlefield. We're walking right. We're praying right. We're singing right. We're ready to fight. But not everybody's ready at the same level. We're all slaying different giants. And we need to help one another. I'll say this in conclusion this evening. I am who I am because of the giants. Some of them I was able to defeat and some of them won, and I'm battle-worn. I've got scars all over my spirit and my emotion from different things that have happened in my life. Spiritual things, physical things, emotional things. But I keep fighting. Now, not every day is a fight. I don't want you to think that there isn't some kind of a rescue or a refuge for the saints. And there is. And that rest comes at the end of this life. So our view's in heaven. Our goal is the prize that waits before us. You know what I mean? And I don't want to discourage anybody tonight. It's not all like that. But we need to understand that this is it's a challenge. Life is a struggle. But don't give up. Because what waits on the other side is worth it. Absolutely. Without a doubt. Heaven exceeds our imagination. And so tonight, won't you come to the shepherd? Won't you come to the shepherd with all of your burdens? Lay them at his feet. Take up his cross and carry it. And he's going to carry your burden. His yoke's easy. That's what he says. Burden is light. Give him what you've got and take what he's got. And at least for a little while, know that you're safe in the arms of Jesus Christ. Get prepared, put on the armor, make sure that somebody's got your six, and then go out into the world. And have somebody that you can call, somebody that you can take with you. And then go out there and find more soldiers to do battle. Go out there and encourage them to be those who were once delivered from all that is evil out there. Bring them in, we bury them. The old person's gone away and raised to be a new creature. I like the new creature. But the old one still has some recordings in my mind that reminds me, you know, you're not as well off as you think you are, and you have to push those away. And out with the old and in with the new. The more we fill up with this, especially my BB brain at 57, the more I fill up with this, the more of the world goes out my head and it can't come back because there's no room for it. I've swept it clean and I continue to fill up. There's a way to encourage you this evening. Everyone needs some encouragement. I don't know what that is. If it's something that needs to be done publicly, we're going to call you to come and sing in just a moment. If it's someone who needs to come out of the world and be rescued by the Savior, everything is ready tonight to bring you unto Him. If you'll just come while we stand and sing.
Jesus, the loving shepherd, calls thee now to come into the fold of safety, where there is rest and room. Come in the strength of manhood, come in the morn of youth, into the fold of safety, enter the way of truth. Lovingly, tenderly calling is He, wanderer, wanderer, come unto me. Patiently waiting there, standing I see, Jesus, my Shepherd divine. Jesus, the loving Shepherd, gave His dear life for thee. Tenderly now He's calling, wanderer, come to me. Haste, for without is danger, come Christ the Shepherd blessed. Enter the fold of safety, enter the place of rest. Lovingly, tenderly calling is He, wanderer, wanderer, come unto me. Patiently waiting there, standing I see, Jesus, my Shepherd divine. Lingering is but folly, wolves are abroad today, seeking the sheep who straying, seeking the lambs to slay. Jesus, the loving Shepherd, calleth thee now to come. Enter the fold of safety, where there is rest and room. Lovingly, tenderly calling is He, wanderer, wanderer, come unto me. Patiently waiting there, standing I see, Jesus, my Shepherd divine.